Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle is with me. We have a shit ton of Bears news to talk about. More Bears news than we expected we would have to talk about. Although, Kyle, when last we left off, we did mention the Bears have this money and they do have to spend it somewhere. And they sure found some places to spend it.
So, I mean, when we last left off, we were talking about how the Bears had set themselves up pretty well in free agency by adding Joe Tooney and Jonah Jackson and answering their two biggest questions at guard. But we did say there was one more move on the interior of the offensive line that they could make. And Travis, in what must have been one of the most record-breaking contract negotiation, just with incredible speed, Ryan Pohl somehow in like 4 minutes managed to negotiate on the first day of legal tampering, because we know there's no way that these discussions were happening before that. They managed to negotiate a contract with the offensive line prize of the free agent market, Drew Dahlman, or at least of the center market.
Yeah, it's interesting because according to Drew, he also had time to turn down better offers in those 4 minutes. So this guy is like lightning quick on the decision making.
That seems, yeah, it's crazy that he had the chance to do this. So yeah, I mean, Drew Dahlman, look, it was the most poorly kept secret in the entire weekend leading up to the legal tampering period. Benjamin Albright was like, the night before, it was like, boy, who wants to take bets on Chicago? Just like last year with DeAndre Swift being the first team to announce a contract, and who wants to take bets on it being Drew Dahlman, wink face. How do you feel about Drew Dahlman, Travis?
Yeah, I mean, this is like the most obvious slam dunk thing the Bears could have done. Having, you know, surprisingly been able to take care of the guard positions before free agency opened. Joe Tooney coming available when Ryan Poles has stated he did not think that was going to happen. I think last week we had speculated, in fact, that perhaps Poles is the one who thought, if they're keeping one guard, maybe I could get the other. That doesn't seem to be the case. Apparently the case is that Andy Reid knew he had to clear cap, and he asked Joe, and Joe said he wanted to go to the Bears if he was getting traded, which is a nice little feather in the Bears' cap. But also to get Jonah Jackson for what is essentially nothing, like a 6-round pick, which is worthless. And now, yeah, we go into free agency. We have all this money, and you spend it on the thing that we have been hunting since Olin Krutz rode off into that good night. A goddamn honest-to-goodness true center. And a fine one at that by PFF, a top-5 center. Certainly better at run blocking than pass blocking, but like his pass blocking is twice as good as any center we have fielded for at least 5 years. That tells you anything.
I mean, this has probably been the longest running theme on the Scottcast, and I'm talking about going back to the first iteration.
That's true.
Of the Scottcast, our very first season that we did way back at the end of 2011, maybe it was 2012. Was right in the wake of the Olin Krutz, when the Bears finally said goodbye to Olin Krutz. And we were like, all that offseason, was like, who's going to play center? Who's going to play center? And then they just shuffled Roberto Garza over there.
Poor Roberto Garza.
Yeah, and Roberto was fine at center for a couple of years, but started the process for so many years where the Bears just treated the center position as an afterthought. You had Roberto Garza, and then they did try, I think at one point Pace had hopes for, what was his name, Hieronymus Grass.
Yeah,
nothing ever materialized there. But then, you know, you're shuffling Cody Whitehair from guard to center and back. You drafted James Daniels, and we all thought, oh, they're problem solved. You drafted a great center from Iowa. Plug and play, that position's covered, but then they never actually played him at center. And then, you know, you end up in a situation where Sam Mustipher is at center, and we all know how we felt about that. You end up in a situation where, you know, it's Lucas Patrick, but then he's hurt, and you're back to Sam Mustipher, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, it's Coleman Shelton or Ryan Bates, but Ryan Bates is hurt. And the whole time, especially the last couple of free agents, there have been free agent centers available. Lloyd Cushenberry was available. Tyler Biadasz, who went on to have a very good year with Washington was available, but there were also centers in the draft. The Bears were in position to take centers in the second, third round several times. Never made a move for it. They were aggressive enough to trade up for Tyreek Stevenson, but not enough to trade up for John Michael Schmitz or anything like that. So to see, I was going to say Ryan Poles, but I honestly think this is a Ben Johnson thing. To see Ben Johnson come in and be like, to run my system, I need an experienced, smart, capable, athletic veteran center. That is our top priority in free agency. It's so refreshing because this does feel like it should be fucking football 101, but we are an organization that has been remedial for so long. So it's revolutionary stuff for us.
Yeah. This is the least Bears thing the Bears possibly could have done, addressing the offensive line permanently. And I mean, the thing that getting Dalman does, this is the last piece as far as quality starting offensive lineman goes. When you have a full five-man offensive line of nothing but quality guys, everybody gets better because everybody can feed off each other. Everybody's assignments are being manned by somebody who's at the very least competent. And the biggest problem with the Bears, especially over the last few years, is sure, you've got two fine tackles. It doesn't really matter when 60% of your line is just going to fall apart. And so to see the Bears just fully take care of the problem in one offseason, in a way, you know, it makes me feel like, oh, they can do that? Like, I've been waiting 20 years for this. Like, I can't believe that you've just decided to solve this problem right now. There are still questions. Tooney's getting older. Obviously, Jackson's not coming off a good year. Dalman, like I said, has questions about his pass blocking to an extent. None of these guys are perfect, except for Darnell Wright. But this is such a massive step up from what we've been used to.
As we talked about last week, you know, offensive line, there is always it's a butterfly effect, really. Like a unit that has five above average players will play better generally than a unit that has two elite players and three shit ones. If there's not obvious black, like if you and I actually were talking about this as I was looking at the numbers on PFF, you know, when you look at the five highest snap getters on the Bears offensive line last year, all five of them graded out above average to very good in terms of raw pass protection grade on PFF. Coleman Shelton, even Matt Pryor, Tevin Jenkins, Braxton Jones, Darnell Wright. The problem is that they gave 1,200 to 1,300 snaps to just god-awful replacement players that had to come in when those guys got hurt. You know, Tevin Jenkins gave them 700 pretty good snaps, but he only gave them 700 snaps. You know, a full-time starter would give you almost 1,200, you know. So when you've got Larry Borum stepping in and giving up seven sacks in only 329 snaps, when you have just got getting god-awful play from the Doug Kramers of the world and the Jake Currens and all of that, there were such obvious weak points on the offensive line, and the offensive coordinator that we had was not capable of recognizing that and scheming to hide that the way defensive coordinators were exploiting it every single week. Every single week, we saw defensive coordinators who figured out the math that Shane Waldron was using in pass protection and exploited it and just targeted the weakest guys and just blew up plays right there at the snap. So when you have a unit now where you have five average or better parts, no obvious weak points, they all make each other better. The effect is amplified. They all make each other better because they are less easy to game plan against. They are less easy to exploit. And we know in Ben Johnson, we have a guy with a scheme that is built first and foremost around the offensive line and is built around his protection schemes. Should be so much more cohesive and intelligent than what they were doing last year. And he has the pieces to implement it. And notably, they did not do what past Bears regimes have done, where they leave the talent on the offensive line as is and try to cheap out and then just try to pass off the improvement in the scheme itself as what's going to fix it. That actually is what the Texans are doing right now. I'm looking at the Texans with the defensive head coach at D'Amico Ryans and the way they are responding to a bad offensive line by being like, okay, so that offensive line was bad, but what we could do is build a similarly bad offensive line, but at least this one's cheaper and we can fix it with scheme.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we just talked about, you know, one guy can't save an offensive line. There's nothing that could prove that more than the Texans this last season, right? It didn't matter that Laremy Tunsil was out there at left tackle. Left tackle is one spot. If the other four spots all crumble instantly, he's blocking for no reason almost, right? And that's what he was a victim of here. So, of course, if you're the Texans, you have to trade him for scraps. And Jaden Daniels gets one of the best left tackles in the league. So good for him. God, that guy was just born with a lucky feather in his cap. Under the North Star directly, wasn't he?
There will be the quarterback episode for the drafts coming up next week, folks. And I promise you I've done soul searching on the Jaden Daniels thing and what I'm going to say about it. How I'm going to reflect on what it says about me, what it says about the spreadsheet. Because I actually think it says more about me than it does about the spreadsheet. And we'll get into that. So there's a nice little tease there, a little Jaden Daniels tease, I guess. So that'll be coming up next week. But before we get into that, yeah, one other thing I wanted to say about Dahlman is that I don't think the Bears are in ignorance either of the player that they've got and what his strengths and what his weaknesses are. Because I saw a lot of people say about Drew Dahlman, you know, he is good, but he's very scheme dependent. You need to run a lot of outside zone. You need to run a lot of play action. You need to move the pocket. You need to take advantage of his athleticism. He can't be straight drop back. There is no off, but for once the Bears have those answers. There is no more. Ben Johnson loves to run outside zone. Ben Johnson runs more under center play action than any offensive coordinator in the NFL. And they've beefed up the guards on both sides of him. So they're not expecting this guy to anchor the center of the offensive line all by himself. So it's nice to see that, yes, they went out and they paid for this guy in free agency and got a much more reasonable contract, I think, than ultimately because he turned down more, I guess, than some people were expecting. I think $14 million AAV is completely reasonable. Lloyd Cushenberry, I think, got $13 million AAV last year. So with the growth in the cap, totally makes sense. Totally reasonable contract. But they're not just like, okay, we paid this guy like he's an elite center, so he is an elite center. I think they're cognizant of the things he's good at and the things that he's not so good at. And their scheme and the talent around him is built to put him in advantageous spots to take advantage of the talent he does have. I don't think you're going to see the situations like you consistently saw last year with Shane Waldron, where good players were being put in situations that made them look like bad players because they were just being put in situations that exposed their weaknesses and did not highlight their strengths.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I'm not sure I have much more to say on Dahlman. I mean, obviously this has been so pleasantly surprising, right? Like from the first second when we learned of the trade to get Jonah, you know, where we were like, oh God, this better be step one. This better not be the last step, right? To here, where obviously
almost
the entire plan was to reconstruct the full offensive line. Like, what an incredible boost to morale this has been.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that Poles and Ben Johnson struck as quickly as they did and got it all taken care of. But I'm almost sad that there wasn't time for us to record in between the Jonah Jackson acquisition and then the Tooney acquisition, because like the conversation we had was so funny, and I think it was earned because like we said last week, you know, we said like this Jonah Jackson move is fine if it's a move. If it's the move, I hate it. And we talked about how we had said that so many times in the previous offseason with Ryan Poles, where he gets a Ryan Bates and you're like, yeah, that's fine as long as that's depth and not the plan. And then it ended up being the plan. And so it would have been fun to have that episode of us on the record saying, you know, this is fine as long as he does these things, but he hasn't earned the benefit of the doubt that he will do these follow-up things to make this worthwhile. And here he is. And I think we owe a lot to our head coach there, obviously, and his insistence on his system and what he needs to run it.
Yeah, for sure. All right. We signed Dahlman. We've already gone over the two guards we got in trades. We've gone over this offensive line,
Kyle. Think
we moved on, and the Bears kept buying. They kept buying free agents, and they moved specifically to the other line, the defensive line. How much of this was expected,
do you think? What do you mean by expected?
What were you thinking beyond the Dahlman signing? Was it, we looked out at this free agent class and we were sort of nonplussed, right? it was like, oh, yeah. there's not a ton of great guys. There's not a ton of star players. Grady Jarrett had not been cut at that point. As a couple other guys have been cut who are now available now. But yeah, it was an uninspiring class. And we were like, do you want to dedicate a lot of money to these guys? Probably not. Do you get your offensive lineman and then, you know, telegraph to everybody you're going defensive line in the draft? The Bears seemed to be very sure, very certain about what they wanted. They jumped all over Grady Jarrett. They were absolutely ready to do that. But before that, they signed, I'm going to go with ODB, and I'm going to let you pronounce the name, as I have still not heard it pronounced out loud. So you go for it, Kyle.
Dio Dangbo. So anyways.
Dio Odangbo. I'm going to go with ODB. All right. That's what we're going to say. I'm going to call him the ODB. But yeah, okay. So we made this signing, and I think the thing I sent to you was like, I don't know. And what you had pointed out earlier in the day is like defensive linemen are getting paid. Like mediocre defensive linemen are getting some pretty decent deals here. This is certainly not the worst deal that was handed out in free agency. Definitely not the worst deal to go to a defensive lineman. But it's definitely, we're paying for potential here, right? This is a guy who just kind of started to really start last season, switched often between defensive end and inside defender. I thought watching tape of him that he looked best inside. A lot of really, really snappy moves, snappy pass rush moves, sliding into that three tech spot. But it definitely sounds like this was a signing made to take care of defensive end in Dennis Allen's scheme. He wants a big physical guy who is going to stop the run, has some pass rushing chops. But a lot of that pass rushing is going to be taken care of by the freak nasty play calling that Dennis Allen usually gets involved with, right?
He's an archetype that you see throughout the Dennis Allen scheme in his time in the NFL. Well, I was actually going to rewind a little bit, because I don't think Dio was actually plan A.
Okay.
I really do
conspiracy
think...
Conspiracy time.
It's not conspiracy. I know things. I have heard that, you know, they had gotten their media team... They had told their media team to prepare some Khalil Mack highlight reunion stuff. They were preparing for that possibility. I think until that 11th hour Khalil Mack signing, re-signing with the Chargers on a fully guaranteed $18 million one-year contract. And maybe, I don't know that the Bears could do fully guaranteed $18 million and all the other stuff they wanted to do. Maybe that was the holdup. But, or maybe just that Khalil Mack at this age didn't want to have to move if he didn't have to. But I do think that realistically, Khalil Mack was plan A. And maybe it was Khalil Mack and Dio, I don't know. But I know Khalil Mack, I think, was part of the plan. And then when he... And I don't think Grady Jarrett was part of the plan originally either, because Poles said he found out along with the rest of us that Grady Jarrett was being released. He said he saw it on ESPN.
Yeah.
And then immediately called down and was like, I need all of the Grady Jarrett film that you guys have from this year so I can decide if we want to sign him. So Grady Jarrett was definitely not plan E. So I think the plan A may have been Khalil Mack and Dio, or maybe it was Khalil Mack and some other defensive tackle that now has signed elsewhere. But yeah, they pivoted quickly to plan B, which is Dio, and which is and Grady Jarrett, obviously. So Dio, I will say this. Yeah, the contract in the context of this market and the crazy numbers that some people are getting, it's completely reasonable. And for example, if this doesn't work out, if this doesn't work out for whatever reason, if they were to cut him after year two, so after 2026, the dead cap in 2027 is only $4.5 million. So it's, in reality, it's a 2-year deal that they could get out of pretty painlessly before year three. So when you look at it as like a 2-year, 30 or 2-year, $28 million deal, it's pretty damn reasonable. And yeah, I had a lot of people on Bears Twitter were like, seems like it's the same profile as DeMarcus Walker. You had DeMarcus Walker on the roster for just $5 million. I don't know why you would pay this much more money to only get marginally better at the DeMarcus Walker position. Obviously, I can understand that. And I think it's obviously a disappointment if he truly does not end up being if he doesn't end up being better than DeMarcus Walker. But they're betting the key difference there is that Marcus Walker's 31, Dio's 25. They're obviously betting that this is an ascending player. And they're also betting on Dennis Allen and his track record as a coach and developing players. And he obviously had some great success in New Orleans at developing edge players, especially the unique kind of edge players that he prefers.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, I think this is another example of Poles kind of looking at the scheme that the Bears are going to be running and saying, what do we actually need to run this scheme? Which is something, you know, a lot of Bears GMs don't do. They just gather players and say, hey, this is a good player in a certain type of way. Use him somehow, even if he doesn't fit. And in this case, it seems like, look, Dennis Allen is going to want one of his defensive ends to be a strong, physical, not a speed rusher, kind of guy who's going to set the edge, contain a mobile quarterback and stop the run. Because as we know, Dennis Allen is going to attack. Like, he doesn't need sacks out of his defensive end specifically, right? So, you know, when people came at me with that and they were like, trust me, this is how his scheme is run. This fits his scheme really well. Dio's going to be a great player in that scheme. I'll take that. And yeah, like I said, at the time it felt like an overpay, but as we saw these other contracts going out for, you know, some pretty mediocre players, which is what happens when a free agency period isn't that loaded. This started to look better and better. And like you said, this is essentially a 2-year deal, $14 million a year, basically. And then we can be out of it if he's not that great. And we're getting his 25-26 year and 26-27 year. If you're going to bet on a guy, it's going to be the second contract of a defensive lineman who's on his way up. Like, that's the best bet you can make in the NFL, because that's when they start to turn it on. So there are much worse bets the Bears could have made out there.
Yeah, I mean, I also think it's a matter of, like, priorities. I mean, free NFL free agency, you just can't throw max money at the top guy at each position. And so it's like you're looking at a couple A-tier free agents, and you're looking at a couple, you know, you probably got room for an A-tier move, you got move for a B-tier room, and then you got move for a lot of, you know, C, D, E-tier moves. And so it's about priorities. I think previous Bears regimes may have said the most important thing is we got to fix this defensive line first, and gone for some of the names that people would feel a little bit better about than Dio. But then you might miss out on Drew Dahlman. You might miss out. You might not be able to add a Joe Tooney. So I think given the sequence of events and that they obviously prioritized fixing the offensive line first and prioritized as close to a sure thing as you can get in terms of Joe Tooney and Drew Dahlman at two of those spots, I think you give them a little slack to take this risk here with Dio. It's not a contract that's going to be an albatross if it doesn't work out. And it's a bet on it's a bet on athleticism. It's a bet on a profile, and it's a bet on your defensive coach, who's very highly touted and has a track record of developing players like this. So I don't really, it's not a move I'm like excited about. I'm not gonna sit here and tell you that, oh yeah, this is genius, and I think Dio is the next superstar. I think it is a reasonable gamble, and that's NFL free agency for you.
Yeah, and I think similar to what we said about the offensive line, if this was the one move that the Bears had made, we probably would have been like, okay, so I guess this is the edge opposite of Montez Sweat. Not great, you know, not terrible, but not great. And this still, it kind of feels like we're definitely going defensive line at this point with that, you know, number 10 pick in the draft. But then, about as swift as could be, the Bears also, on a very similar deal, picked up Grady Jarrett, the Atlanta Falcons legend, I should say at this point, like definitely like synonymous with the Falcons over the last decade.
perhaps.
What do we think about the Grady Jarrett pickup? This certainly feels like last year, Kyle, we talked a lot about how fucked we were when our starting interior defensive lineman had to sit on the bench for a little bit. Andrew Billings sat down.
You can trace the Bears' collapse from being a top 10, top 5 unit at the beginning of the season to really falling off to when Andrew Billings went down. I mean, he was that much of a difference maker,
right?
For him, which we love Big Dog, and that's a compliment about him, but also like it's a testament to how bad their depth was behind him that it fell off that hard without that one player. So, I mean, with Grady Jarrett, that's a place where, when you talk about the rookie quarterback surplus and the freedom it gives you to maybe overpay some guys, is this like in terms of absolute value, do I think this is probably an overpay at this stage of Grady Jarrett's career? Yeah. But when you consider what it lets the Bears do, the role that they will ask him to play, and that they have the kind of money to burn because of, the Caleb Williams, Rome Odunze, Darnell Wright, et cetera, all being on rookie contracts. This is the time to get a guy like this because, again, solid veteran presence. But he's still got some juice. I shared with you a chart from PFF showing how often he was still drawing double teams. He was pretty much on that chart. He was like right next to Jervon Dexter. And when you have two guys like that who are so consistently good at drawing double teams, and you have an Andrew Billings that really is going to put, and you can rotate all three of them now instead of just the two of them to keep them all fresh. And because, that's been Jervon's issue through 2 years is he tends to fade late. And Andrew Billings, being a big man, was also not meant to take as many snaps as he's had to take at times. So when you can keep the three of them fresh, Grady Jarrett's an older guy, when you keep him fresh and ask fewer reps of him, fewer snaps of him than Atlanta was, you can hopefully squeeze a little, you can probably, maybe get a little bit of a resurgence at this stage in his career, because he's being asked to do less and he doesn't have to save up and conserve his energy as much. So I think that's a good move there. Stabilizes that interior defensive line. Happy that they struck quickly. I don't really have anything bad to say about a Grady Jarrett signing. I think that was a smart move all around.
Yeah, very fun guy. Great interview, too. Has always been like a massive fan favorite in Atlanta, like a favorite outside of Atlanta. Grady Jarrett's just a great guy, very interesting dude, and a fantastic player. There's a reason if you look at PFF, there are a lot of defensive linemen with like 600 snaps who are in the green, in the dark green, right? Like guys who are pulling 70, 75 overall grades and things like that because they're only taking half the snaps, or even less, like, these complementary edge rushers. But in this case, if you can make this absolute rotation between Jarrett and Billings and Dexter, and you can even throw Dio in there, he played a lot inside in Indianapolis. Well, now you got a stew going, right? Because you can sit guys, and the guy who's coming in isn't a complete liability, right? I guess we brought the Chris Williams back, and he did kind of, I would say, Chris kind of caught on towards the end of the season. It felt like earlier on he wasn't playing too well. Later in the season, it felt like he picked it up. But much better to have him as like, the fourth option. And Zach Pickens, of course, launched directly into the sun.
Yeah, I think this is, I had to laugh out loud because David Hall was on the score. Can't remember which one of my friends it was who nicknamed David Hall David Huh. Years ago, and it's just such a simple nickname but so brutal. Just fucking David Huh. David Huh was like, what does this say about the development, what is this signing of Grady Jarrett, what does that say about the development of Zach Pickens? And I was like, I think it's saying that there hasn't been any David. I think it's saying that ship has sailed.
We said when the Bears made that draft pick, when they picked Jervon Dexter and Zach Pickens, right in a row with two picks in that draft, said they're basically rolling the dice twice. They're saying that we got a 50-50 shot on potential on two guys, and we're hoping that we get heads on one of them. And they did. They got Jervon Dexter, who has been an absolute slam dunk at this point. And to hope that Zach Pickens would also hit, just a little greedy. And he hasn't. He's been pretty disastrously bad. So at this point, you're bringing in a guy like Dio who, yeah, he's going to set the edge a lot, but also played a lot inside for Indianapolis. You know, you said DeMarcus Walker. I think that's what everybody thought, you know, an inside-outside guy. And then to bring in Grady Jarrett on top of that, I think that's exactly what was being said, is nobody's thinking of Zach Pickens right now.
Well, and then you also think about Dennis Allen and the things that when you have a defensive line that can take up bodies like that, you have guys that consistently draw double teams. And you have a guy, I mean, you have an edge in Sweat who is a one-man wrecking crew against the run game, great at drawing double teams. You free Dennis Allen to really do some sicko shit with blitzing. And then, you have guys like Kyler Gordon and Jaquan Brisker, the four games a year where his brain is intact. Like, those are guys who are excellent blitzers when deployed correctly. So there will be ways to bring pressure that they did not have last year.
I can't wait to talk about in previewing this season, Dennis Allen's defense and Kyler Gordon. I was thinking about that today a lot for some reason, just like what a perfect union of defensive coordinator and player is Kyler Gordon and Dennis Allen. He's gonna have a lot of fun this year.
Yeah, I mean, you could easily see Kyler Gordon doing the same kind of stuff for Dennis Allen that CJ GJ was doing for him in New Orleans. So you could totally see him sliding into that role.
Oh, without a doubt. So Kyle, I guess these are the big signings. We can talk about Olabide Zaccheaus.
We sure can.
Here in a little bit.
We sure can.
However, I think we need to talk about how this affects the draft, because I think the thing that kind of took us aback with that next signing, that Grady Jarrett signing, was the Bears are just truly free to pick whoever the hell they want.
This is most importantly, in my opinion, to not make a pick at 10 at all. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we said it's not been good that Ryan Poles has consistently let himself be pigeonholed at draft time, but at the same time, in 2023, when he got himself pigeonholed, that was a good year to be pigeonholed into needing a tackle based on where they were in the draft, because they were going to, we knew there was going to be either a Darnell Wright, a Paris Johnson Jr. There were a couple options there that we would have been okay with. It was okay to be pigeonholed last year into needing a wide receiver, because, I mean, God, that was such a great fucking class. I mean, even in the world where you somehow missed on Roma Dunze, if you'd had to trade down and take Brian Thomas Jr., that would have been just fine.
Yep.
So that was the year that's like, fine, you want to be pigeonholed taking a wide receiver.
Last year, you could have been pigeonholed at almost any position.
Yeah.
And you would have been super pleased.
The fucking disparity between last year's draft and this year's draft in terms of overall talent level. Good
Lord. Oh, it's a gulf. It is a fucking gulf, Kyle.
Yeah. We didn't have the Scottcast during the 2022 draft, but it was the last draft where I was just like, oh, fuck. This is that draft again, because 2023 wasn't bad. It wasn't great. 2024 was just a blue chip draft all around. This year is just, it's not good.
We haven't had a draft cast yet where we're just like ruthlessly shitting on every dude.
I mean, most of the time draft season is we're talking about all the players we love. There's guys we're willing to go to bat for. And then even just like with what I consider to be maybe the strongest group in these drafts are the offensive and defensive lines. And even then I'm nitpicking the shit out of everybody. I'm just like, I mean, yeah. 2 years ago, we went to fucking bat for Nolan Smith. We were ready to go to war.
That's
for
right.
Nolan Smith. And even though that looked dicey his rookie year, the kid fucking played good ball in year two. So we were a little nervous.
Talk about people with greed numbers on PFF, because now they're only getting 500 snaps. There's one of them.
Exactly. You just gotta learn how to deploy Nolan Smith correctly. But no, I mean, this year's draft, I'm just like, So yeah, I mean, the ability to be flexible at 10 is very important. I know a lot of Bears fans are doing the Ashton Jean T thing. And I think they've done enough that I wouldn't be mad if that happened, but I honestly still don't, this draft's so shitty, I still don't expect him to be there at 10, if we're being honest.
As the draft has started to crystallize and all of the pundits have gained more information from teams, I've noticed him creeping into the top five.
Oh yeah. I mean, I
don't even hate it. It's like, who are you going to take?
If Bijan can go, what was it? Eighth in 2023, which was a much better draft. I don't see any reason Jean T can't be. I mean, everyone's penciling the Raiders at six, and I could see that happening, but I, or that could be the Raiders advertising that, hey, if you want G&T, you, this is where you need to move up to.
Yep.
So yeah, I don't know that G&T will be there at 10, but yeah, the important thing is the flexibility to be able to move out of 10 or at just to say true best player available there. Cause it might be tackle prospect. It might be a guard prospect. It might be a defensive lineman. It could be a running back. Or hell, maybe you're sitting there and every other good player's off the board and you're the team that takes Tet McMillan just because he's the one wide receiver worth having a shit in this draft at that stage. And you can never have too many of those either. So, yeah, the flexibility is good. Yeah, because this is just not a draft where you want to feel like you need something specifically going into it.
No, absolutely not. So, yeah, I would say if there were anything like just absent the players involved and I had to say the Bears, what position do you want them to draft? If, you know, I couldn't see the players for some reason, I guess I would say like a guard tackle hybrid. You know, it'd be nice to have another backup, I suppose, on this line. Nice to have a young guy. But it's not such a need. It's not such a desperate thing that I'm like, oh, please, please reach if Kelvin Banks and Will Campbell are gone. Like, get the next guy. Although I've seen Armon Membo climbing up draft boards because who the fuck knows in this draft. But it's a situation where it's like, you know what, Bears? You're playing with house money, man. Take the guy you think is going to be good because it's all a gamble at 10 this year. And even more so with our 2 second round picks. So just go hog wild, man. Take whatever player you think could actually be a starter in the NFL. How about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, do you want to talk about Olamide Zaccheaus?
I fucking love talking about Olamide Zaccheaus.
You really do.
It's been... What, this is the third offseason, the one offseason where I didn't suggest him as an option because I mean, I was thinking more like, Tim Patrick and Josh Reynolds because of the obvious connections to Ben Johnson. But before the 2023 season, I said, I was like, Olamide Zaccheaus is a nice buy low wide receiver three option. I think I said it again.
And I thought you were joking.
I said it again last year before the move for Keenan Allen.
And last year I thought it was a running joke. And I was like, what is your obsession with a man whose name is Olamide Zaccheaus?
It's not an he's just, so he is, now to be fair, he is not a good wide receiver three in a system in which wide receiver three actually needs to be good. but he is a dude. You like that? You like that? Thank you. That's called rhetoric. I'm a wordsmith.
He's not great.
You know, you take a second.
He's a bad wide receiver three if that's what you need.
But if you look at Ben Johnson's system, wide receiver three, I feel like is kind of it's the Hunter Hillenmeyer role of his offense. It's like it's a thankless job. If you get 500 yards, you're fucking lucky. You are blocking your ass off. And that's why, because I've seen people like, the Bears should get Cooper Kupp. They should bring back Keenan Allen. And I'm just like, that is not what wide receiver, the ideal target distribution in a Ben Johnson offense, the wide receiver three is probably going to be fifth in targets. It's wide receiver one. It's wide receiver two. It's tight end. It's running back. Then it's wide receiver three. So, I think Zaccheaus, he's a guy that he is a willing blocker. He's a guy you can give the ball to sometimes in the backfield. He is sometimes a decent vertical target. And he cost them $1.8 million. So I think that is a guy that for that role, because that was one of the things that I'd still like if they added a wide receiver in this draft potentially, but the wide receiver crop is not great.
How quickly you abandoned Tyler Scott. I'm so sad for Tyler. You were like his number one cheerleader and you are acting like he doesn't.
He had
even
one
exist.
Catch.
Like
one,
my
one catch. Yeah. I mean, Tyler Scott just has to be, he's a non-entity.
Poor Tyler. I don't even think he's good, and I feel so bad for him because you're just like, that's not even a real guy. Like, we have a real head coach now and a real offense, Tyler. Yeah. Like, you need to leave.
Okay? Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely think one thing you mentioned today was maybe the Bears trade down and maybe you take a guy like Luther Burden.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that would make sense to get another wide receiver in the pipeline, but this also isn't a draft where that's necessarily going to be a very convenient and easy thing to do. So I do think if you had to line, and that's the thing that hasn't been the case for most part of the polls era, but like right now it's March 13th. And if you had to line up and play a game with this roster tomorrow, you'd feel fine with DJ Moore as your wide receiver one, Roma Dunze as your wide receiver two, and running Zacchaeus out there as primarily a blocking wide receiver three. That's fine. You have plugged that gap. Obviously you could do better. But you've got a player that you can run out there. He was a useful contributor for Washington this year. He was useful, I believe, was he on the Eagles the year before?
It was a bird team for sure.
Well, he was with the Falcons at one point.
It was the Eagles last year and the Falcons before. Yeah.
Yeah, and again, he is in all of those teams, he's primarily like he's done what he's probably going to do for Ben Johnson. He does a lot of blocking. Mm-hmm. That's why Arthur Smith and Ben Johnson aren't super similar, but one thing, you know, if you no block, no rock is the philosophy for Ben Johnson and Arthur Smith both. Zacchaeus, that, you know, his last 2 years in Atlanta, he averaged 36 catches, 470 yards, 3 touchdowns, just nothing spectacular, but also, you know, not, I mean, hell, a couple years ago that would have led the Bears in receiving, am I right, folks?
Well, this is that I was going to say, this is the Equanimee St. Brown signing if we actually had a team that could support an Equanimee St. Brown being on the roster.
Right. The thing about Olamide Zacchaeus is that he is a perfectly fine wide receiver 3/4 option. And I mean, I think Equanimee St. Brown's a little worse than that. He's more like a perfectly fine wide receiver 4/5 option, but you know, past Bears teams, those guys would have been elevated far beyond that. And obviously this year's roster, you would hope that is not the case.
I respect the Notre Dame hatred, so I'm gonna let that slide. I don't.
It's not Notre Dame. What you? I'm gonna shout out our loyal listener Rudy because he's always on you about this. But like, you really like Equanimee St. Brown too fucking much. I don't get it.
I'm damning him with faint praise here, but yeah, I mean, we're bringing on a guy to block. He should not be put in a position where he has to catch a bunch of balls. If a ball goes to him, you know, he can catch it, but it's going to be rare, and it should be rare. We don't want him to be in a position where he has to be the guy, and God willing, he won't be. So yeah, it's a fine signing. It's just, it's not anything I'm going to get excited about. The only reason talk about it is you have brought him up so much.
I'm just gonna say, Equanimee St. Brown and Olamide Zacchaeus have both played 6 years in the NFL. Okay.
Okay.
Zacchaeus has 1,998 career receiving yards on 149 career receptions.
So that's pretty good for a number three guy. Yeah.
Equanimee St. Brown has 928 yards on 63 career receptions. So yeah, I am a little offended on behalf of Zacchaeus.
That's that very you would funny
compare
because
him to Equanimee St. Brown. Equanimee St. Brown's career high was obviously with the 2022 Bears when they had to use him way too damn much, and that was 21 receptions for 323 yards. Zacchaeus,
Where was Zacchaeus drafted? Wasn't St. Brown pretty highly drafted too?
St. Brown was drafted in the 6th round in 2018.
Oh, no. Okay. Never mind. So they're both.
Are you thinking of Chase Claypool? Is that the Notre Dame wide receiver you're thinking of?
No, I never think of Chase Claypool, Kyle.
Zacchaeus was actually not drafted at all. He's an undrafted free agent. And
amazing.
What he's done for himself. Yeah.
You know what? Well done, Olamide.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's coming off 545 catches, 506 yards for the Commanders. A couple years ago, he had his career high is 533.
Did you notice his yards per reception last year with Washington? I am so annoyed by that offense to the very core of my being, 11.2 yards per reception. Well,
there'll be time to talk about that when we talk about Jaden Daniels, Travis. We have
Jarvis Landry levels of I'm going to catch the ball.
That's rich coming from the motherfucker that wanted Jarvis Landry for like 6 years in a row.
You know what? He caught the ball. All right. And at that time, we didn't have people who did that. All right. We had Dante Pettis.
You were out here just craving another Marty Booker here. So
anybody who will hold the ball in their hands, that's it. That's all I want.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, Zacchaeus, that was, again, just if you were talking about the main boxes, the Bears, because, I mean, ideally you go into the draft and you're not looking for starters in the draft as rookies. You're looking for depth and you're looking to be flexible. And the Bears have entered every single draft of the Poles era looking for immediate starters. And this year they're not, because if you looked at the main boxes that needed to be checked on this roster, you needed two starting guards. You needed a starting center. You needed an edge. You needed another defensive tackle. You needed a third wide receiver. They have checked all of those boxes.
Yep.
So they can truly be flexible. They can truly pivot, something that Poles has been fucking terrible about entering the draft before. And so it's nice to see that change as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there are some guys in this draft who I think have a lot of talent who should be jumped on if they fall to 10. So it's nice to be able for Poles to just say, yeah, you know what? I'm going to yoink this guy because I don't need anyone at this time. I don't have to go away from, you know, a defensive end if a guy I really like is there, or a tackle if a guy I really like is there. I can get these guys even if they're going to be backups. It doesn't really matter. We can stack talent at this
point. Well, and another nice thing is some of the tackles that I do kind of, I feel like in this little preview, I guess, for the offensive line, my read on this is that there are a couple guys who are Skoronskis, where they're polished, but they're also guards who might be tackles. And I think the guys who have more of the true tackle skill sets and abilities and size, you know, like a Kelvin Banks, are also guys that I wouldn't say are very polished. Like Kelvin Banks is a guy that I think could be pretty good, but I wouldn't want to start him week one as a rookie. So it's nice to be in a position where you're not looking for a Darnell Wright, because there ain't one in this draft. That was the main draw for Darnell Wright, because, you know, there was some argument. Ended up being a moot point because he went ahead of the Bears pick. But, you know, there was a debate between like Paris Johnson Jr. where it's like, well, he could be a future left tackle. He's got more overall talent. He's a little bit younger. You know, the potential upside of a Paris Johnson Jr. is there. But you and I were both zeroed in on Darnell Wright because we felt that he was the best blend of talent and potential, but also pro readiness. This year's draft, there's not a Darnell Wright, but I also don't think they would need to reach for the Will Campbell necessarily if they don't love him as a tackle, just because he is more experienced, more polished, potentially more ready to start. You could go with a guy like Banks and sit him for a year because you do have quality starters and you can start working on a succession plan behind them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, sadly, not only is there not a Darnell Wright, there's not a Paris Johnson Jr. either.
There's not.
There are guards.
There's guards, and more guards.
So. You can have a guard, or you can have a guard, or you could play a guard at tackle. I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah.
But you could if you really want to. The Chiefs did it last year with the guy who's our left guard right now. Yeah. So
one cool thing is that somehow, I believe the Bears are likely, at the way things are going, to get a comp pick or two next year.
Doesn't seem possible.
For a contract to qualify for comp pick math, it just has to be at least $5 million. So, and Grady Jarrett does not count towards the comp pick formula because he was released. Tooney and Jackson obviously don't count because the Bears traded for them. So the only two signings that they've made so far that would count against comp pick formula are Dahlman and Dio. But they've already seen Coleman Shelton and Daryl Taylor sign for at least $5 million elsewhere. So right now they're net even, and you would expect probably that Tevin Jenkins, Keenan Allen, all those guys will get at least $5 million somewhere. So the Bears could end up actually netting a comp pick next year. And maybe if the mythical Ian Cunningham hire ever happens, they could end up with a lot of draft picks next year. We'll see.
That's right. In a much better draft.
Yes.
Absolutely. So that would be nice. Yeah. Deferring as many picks from this draft as possible, quite frankly, would be great. Like, honestly, Ryan, if you want to turn a first rounder this year into a first rounder next year, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
I'm not against it. So yeah, do we, we're at 51 minutes. I feel like we've said all we need to say. We can continue to talk about just how generally bad this draft is, or we could just tell the people that next week we are starting our draft coverage.
We are.
We're diving headlong into quarterbacks, but we're also finally going to get the main event, folks, after many weeks of hemming and hawing, of depression, self-loathing, some self-righteousness. I think you went through every stage of grief, Kyle. You're going to talk about Jaden Daniels next week, from what I understand.
Yeah. Well, I'm not just about Jaden Daniels. I'm going to talk about, you know, the spreadsheet, what it actually said about Jaden Daniels, what I actually said about Jaden Daniels, what ended up being accurate, what ended up not being accurate. If I did miss, and of course, I mean, you could say I missed, because obviously I didn't think the guy was going to have a rookie season like that, and he did. But how did I miss? What did I miss? Was it about the data? Was it about the interpretation of the data? Was it about something else entirely? But I also wanted to talk about, you know, how the other rookie quarterbacks from last year fared. I got some takes on Bo Nix, too, because I think people are being annoyingly revisionist about what was actually said about Bo Nix in lieu of what he did this year.
I'm going to rip Bo Nix a new asshole.
All right, then. But yeah, and then we'll get into the quarterbacks of this year's draft. I'll be honest, next week I'm only covering the top two. I know some people, there has been some talk of Jackson Dart as a possible first rounder. I refuse to live in that reality. I just won't do it. But, you know, we'll hear what the spreadsheet has to say about Shedeur Sanders, about Cam Ward, and about if the lessons that I think I have learned from last year's crop, and how if that applies to how I'm looking at Shedeur and Cam Ward. So we'll get into the quarterbacks. If we have time next week, we might start on the running backs. Otherwise, that'll be coming after that. Because we will have, but last year we did not talk about running backs at all. I think we specifically said we didn't want the Bears to draft running back. We didn't think they were going to. We weren't going to talk about them at all. If you wanted to know about it, find someone else. So this will be the first year. I think we did talk about them a little bit in 2023. I remember having takes about Zach Charbonnet.
Yes, yeah, and I mentioned little-known prospect Devon Achain, and then you got tweets from people telling me that I was a dumbass. Well, fuck you, people. Look at how prescient I am. I called that this motherfucker said that guy, how dare him. He did. He also took CJ Spiller's name in vain, did he not? I remember this tweet. He was like, that guy, he's going to be CJ Spiller. And I was like, you know what, motherfucker? CJ Spiller is a saint. A fucking saint. That's a rant I've been holding in for a couple years now. Totally right about Achain.
All right.
Back to you, Kyle. Yeah. Sorry, little explosion.
So yeah, we'll have our first real in-depth look at running backs for Scott's
right.
draft season in a hot minute. So yeah, a lot of stuff to look forward to.
Yeah, so, hey, I'll see you next week, bud.
All right, later. Way out on that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. And people I show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.